Do you harbor dreams of being a published author? Come and listen to the show that will get you there. The Shit No One Tells You About Writing is a popular writing podcast hosted by one best-selling author and two literary agents. The show oscillates between critiquing writers' pitch letters, known as query letters, plus their 5 pages, and the next week hosting author interviews with best-selling and debuts like Emily Henry, Lauren Groff, Richard Osman, Leanne Moriarty, Ellen Hildebrand, Marlon James, Britt Bennett, and more. If you're a modern writer looking for an edge or a newbie looking to learn more about the business, listen to The Shit No One Tells You About Writing wherever you get your podcasts. That's The Shit No One Tells You About Writing.
Hey there. Thanks for joining us for this episode of 13. This is part two of a 5-part series. If you haven't listened to the first episode, go back and do that first. We'll be here when you get back. We're recording these credits in advance, so here's Ian from the future to tell you about our new patrons.
Hi, Ian from the future here. We'd like to thank Haley Nolan, Befika, Stella Hart, Julie Stone, Daisy Chains, Bass Rocks Hard 4, Mary J., Teddy, Colossal X, JoJo Sloan, Anna, Blaine Austin Jr., Michelle Pagic, Rachel Sharp, Takoy, Jennifer Kimling, Rex Luther, Kaylin Lalonde, Rebecca Piper, Habitual Bed Farter. Brenda Lean, and Morgan Pfeiffer. Thank you so much for your support, and welcome to the Pod Fam. If you want to hear your name immortalized in audio, or if you'd like access to other perks like ad-free episodes, exclusive merch, or over 4 years of Patreon-exclusive stories, including the next 3 episodes of this series, then you should check us out on Patreon too. Just click on the link in the show notes to learn more. It's patreon.com/pod13. Now, back to Brooke from the past.
Brooke from the past here. Just a reminder, we do content warnings at the bottom of the show notes, so check that out by scrolling all the way to the bottom. If you don't think you're in the right headspace for this series, please take care and pass it by for now. You can always come back later.
This is part two of The Secret Game, written by Ian Epperson, narrated by Brooke Jeanette. Kaylee is Shelby Novak. Abby is Kayla Timshev. Mrs. Lander is Emma Sherjarko. Jess is Carly Coulihan. And Emma is Abigail Blythe. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show.
When I was a kid, my church was obsessed with the end times and spiritual warfare and the devil trying to lead you astray. We were taught that certain things would give evil spirits an opening to influence you, like watching movies with sex scenes or listening to music that had satanic messages. But there were other things that were worse, things that could be less of an influence and more like an invitation to those evil spirits, like participating in occult games like Ouija boards. And I guess the mirror game was sort of like that. Back then, every strange feeling, every desire that I thought was sinful, I imagined they were all coming from spirits that I'd accidentally invited in by playing the mirror game. Even though, in retrospect, it was just normal teenager stuff. When I was in high school, my mom got up early to leave for work. She usually woke me up just before she left, and then I got ready for school by myself. Strange things began happening around the house when I was alone. Some mornings, I would swear that I'd seen someone out of the corner of my eye. Someone looking in a window, someone at the end of the hall or across the room. A couple of times, I'd be getting ready in the bathroom at the end of the hall, putting on my makeup or doing my hair. And all of a sudden, my mom would lean in the doorway. She'd startle me. I'd see her in the reflection. She must have forgotten something and come back to get it. She'd say something about me being late if I didn't hurry up, or that she'd see me later that evening. And then I'd watch her in the mirror as she'd turn and disappear back out into the hallway. I'd roll my eyes and keep doing what I was doing. But then I'd realize that I never heard her footsteps down the hall. I never heard the rattle of her keys or the door open and close. I'd step out into the hall and it would be silent. I'd check the kitchen. I'd check her bedroom. And then I would look out front to see if her car was still there. Nothing. The worst of these little events only happened once. I laid down for bed one night, and I was beginning to doze. I heard movement, somewhere close. Then, I opened my eyes. My folding closet doors that had been closed, they were open. I laid there, unsure what to do, watching. And then, I saw something peeking out from around the door. It was my mom. I was terrified. Even if I could, I didn't dare move. She stepped out of the closet and took slow, deliberate steps across the room. She made her way to the bedroom door. As she stepped out into the hallway and turned to close the door behind her, she raised her head and met my gaze. There was a sinister grin and a hollowness in her eyes. Her face was wrong. I couldn't tell you what was different, but I just knew that it wasn't her. She closed the door behind her, and I laid in bed, waiting. For what? I'm not sure. Eventually, I got up and ran to my mom's room, screaming and scaring her to death. I startled her out of a dead sleep. I laid in her bed, screaming and sobbing, while she brushed the hair out of my eyes and swore to me that it was just a dream. When I say it all together like that, it sounds like living in that house was a nightmare. But it wasn't. It was really just a few instances over the years. Huge swaths of time passed with nothing strange happening at all. And as I grew up, I really didn't think about those memories. Instead, when I thought about that house, it was the nights Mom and I cooked together. Movie nights with friends. I thought of the weekends reading in my room, staring at the ceiling, being bored in the way only teenagers can be, waiting for life to begin. But I've never been able to fully shake those little things that happened back then. As an adult, I haven't gone to church or believed in any of that for a long time. But that kind of thing has a way of sticking with you. Anytime something strange or unexplained happens, I can't help it. My mind just goes there first. After hearing about Emma's passing, I had the urge to go home. I don't know why. I just wanted to be there. It was only about 45 minutes away. It was still Tuesday, and it was early in the afternoon. I changed into something more casual. Then, I got in my car, and I drove out of my neighborhood. I got onto Interstate 71 and made my way out of the city and into the dense forest that lines the Ohio River. It was a familiar trek. I made this drive almost every weekend to visit my mom. A few years ago, her mind had started to slip into dementia. It was manageable for a while, but a few months ago, she woke up in the middle of the night and decided to go for a walk. She forgot where she was, who she was, and how to get home. A neighbor a few streets over woke up that morning to find her sleeping on his front lawn. Thank God it had been a warm night. After that, we decided that it was best for her to move into an assisted living home. It was a nice place, vastly different from how I remembered nursing homes when I was a kid. She had made some friends, and with the staff there staying on top of her medication, she seemed to be doing even better than she had been at home. I knew that she would appreciate the surprise visit, but I didn't know whether or not I should tell her about Emma. I was leaning against it. Emma and the other girls had been like daughters to her, and they were a huge part of my childhood. They were always around. Mom still asked me if we'd ever gotten back in touch. She would want to know. But I also didn't want to upset her. A thought also crossed my mind as I drove. Abby. Abby is living back in our hometown. She went to college in Lexington and moved home afterward. She was a small town girl at heart. Even a small city was too much for her. I wondered if she was free, and I thought about trying to reach out. But I decided against it. I spent about an hour and a half with Mom. She was surprised to see me. And honestly, I think I needed to see her more than she needed to see me. Afterward, I just drove around, taking in the places where I used to spend my time. Places I associated with Emma, where all those memories were made. But when you leave a place, it keeps moving on with or without you. Some of the places we used to spend our time were mostly gone, closed down, and turned into something new. But there were still a few of them left. The church was one of them, the one where we'd spent so much of our childhoods together. I drove past it a couple of times, but I didn't want to pull into the parking lot or try to go in. There were still too many people there that I knew when I was a kid. I wasn't religious anymore, and I didn't want to have that conversation. It was downtown, a block from the river. The original church was old, but it had grown over the years. There were several additions built onto it. I remembered how, inside the building, you might seamlessly transition from a corridor that felt like it was 10 years old to a part of the building that felt like it was 100 years old. From the riverfront, there was another memory in sight. Downriver, about a half mile, there was an old decommissioned railroad bridge. The rail line passed right through Jess's old neighborhood, and on the few occasions we had our sleepovers over there, we snuck out and climbed the bridge, walking out over the river, crossing all the way over to Indiana. The Indiana side of the river was dark. There were no houses or roads nearby, and it's a longer walk than we imagined. But when we got to the other side, we could look back across the river and see the lights from our town. It looked so much smaller from over there. I thought about texting Abby again, but I talked myself out of it. It was getting later in the afternoon. She would want to get home from work and relax. She was grieving too, and I didn't know what that looked like for her. Besides, too much time had passed. I felt like I would be putting her on the spot. Even as the thoughts went through my mind, I knew I was overthinking it. But even so, I decided against it. Before I left town, I decided to stop by my old house, the one where I grew up. My mom had still lived there, right up until she moved into the assisted living center. It felt wrong for her to sell it. Even though we both knew that she wasn't going to be moving back in, neither of us had actually said that out loud. And getting rid of the house, well, It kind of felt like giving up on her. It would need to happen someday, but there was no rush. I didn't have a good reason for stopping in, but it just felt right. It was getting dark as I pulled into the old neighborhood. I put my key in the deadbolt and opened the door. The door creaked open, and there was a heavy darkness inside the house. I reached in and flipped the light switch by the front door, and the light over the living room came on. It had been a little while since I'd come here. At first, I'd stop by all the time and pick up the things she'd need. But those stop-ins became less and less frequent. Everything looked like I remembered. It was comforting. It made this whole experience, Mom's decline, feel like it wasn't real somehow. On the other hand, the utter silence inside the house, the feeling of her absence, they assured me it was very much real. Mom's house wasn't huge by any stretch of the imagination, but by comparison to where I lived, it felt absolutely cavernous. I paced around the living room and kitchen. There was a fine layer of dust starting to settle over everything. I could see where I'd moved things around on my previous visits by where the dust was distributed. The counter, the coffee table, on the mantel where the family photos sat below a big ornate mirror, a hand-me-down from my grandmother. I looked at my reflection and I wondered what I was doing with my life. The overhead light was bright in the living room, but down the hall, toward the bedrooms and bathroom, the light didn't quite reach the end. The doors off the hallway were all open, and the darkness seemed heavier somehow. For a moment, I had that feeling again, like the one I'd had in middle school when I was at home by myself after Mom left for work. That feeling, like I was about to see something out of the corner of my eye, by the window, at the end of the hall. I needed to sit down, but the idea of sitting on the couch, of getting too comfortable, I don't know, I didn't like it. I went to the kitchen, which was only separated from the living room by a change in the flooring, from carpet to tile. I sat at the kitchen table and leaned back against the chair. Even though it really wasn't that far, I was dreading the drive back to Louisville. If I really wanted to, I could sleep here tonight. I had already decided that I wasn't going to work in the morning. My childhood bedroom had long ago been turned into a guest room. It was still the same bed I'd slept in all those years ago. But there was something about the darkness at the end of the hall. I knew that turning on the light would only make it worse somehow. No, I needed to go home, back to the city. I felt tense as I got up, as if I were trying not to make a sound, trying not to draw attention to myself in this empty house. Outside, it had become fully dark. I turned the key, and my headlights came on. Even in my car, I didn't feel quite safe yet. I didn't feel far enough outside, if that makes sense. The neighborhood was dark too. I'd grown up just a couple streets from the edge of town. In one direction, behind me, the sky was full of light from the neighborhoods, strip malls, and parking lots that made up my hometown. But in front of me, there was darkness over the rooftops. And something about that didn't sit well with me at all. I backed out of her driveway, and I started toward the interstate. I pulled up in front of my building. My neighborhood is one of the old parts of the city, the Highlands. The trees here are tall and old. It was windy, the way it gets in the fall. Leaves were coming down out of those trees and skittering down the street. I went upstairs and I turned the key in my deadbolt. Outside my kitchen window, I could hear the branches clicking together. Across the back parking lot, there was another building like mine on the next street over. A light came on, and I could barely make out what looked like someone doing dishes at a kitchen sink. I picked up my phone, and I opened one of my social media apps. I went to Abby's profile and tapped the message icon. I thought I'd broach the subject instead of putting her on the spot. I typed,
"Went home for a little while today. Thought about seeing what you were doing, but I didn't want to intrude."
I sat on the couch and put my head back. I could hear someone moving around in the apartment above me, and it startled me. I rolled my eyes, mostly at myself. I've always been pretty easily spooked. I liked living alone, without roommates, but I didn't like feeling isolated. Little apartment buildings like these, they were perfect. Just a few people nearby. Enough that I was never really alone, but also it didn't feel crowded. And they didn't feel like complete strangers. We'd all bumped into each other around the building. It was perfect, even if the occasional noise startled me. To my right, the archway into the kitchen was dark. I could see straight out the window to the building on the next street. The dark shape of branches and blowing leaves moved around outside the glass. That light from the second floor kitchen window went out. I heard my phone vibrate on the couch cushion. A text from Abby. "You should have told me you were in town. I've been thinking about you and the others all day." I smiled. You and the others. It was nice to know that I wasn't the only one that still thought of us as a kind of unit, even after all this time. Abby and I exchanged a few more messages. She asked how I was doing with the news about Emma. I told her it was just so weird and so sad. I asked if she knew anything about what had happened, about how it happened. She didn't. We made plans to meet up the next day. I had a lot of PTO saved up, and I already knew I wasn't planning to go into work tomorrow. I told her I was going to call it a night, and I'd be in touch in the morning, and we could make plans. I stumbled into my bedroom. I'd only heard the news this morning, but it felt like that had been days ago, and I'd been on the edge of tears off and on this whole time. I was emotionally exhausted. Talking with Abby had been exactly what I needed. I was reminded of Kaylee and the weird messages we'd traded early in the day, right after I found out. I checked my phone again to see if she'd sent anything else. She hadn't. I made a mental note to check back in with her, even though the thought of talking to her still irked me. It had been such a long time, but a part of me still thought of her as the girl that had betrayed Abby. I climbed under my sheets, and I stared up at the ceiling. It was inevitable. The four of us would be back in the same place at the same time. And while I looked forward to it, I also hoped that all of the bad feelings about our falling out didn't come back up. And I wondered if Kaylee had ever figured it out, that I was the reason she got caught back then. I looked at my phone. It was only 9:45. It was getting dark earlier, and it felt later than it really was. Nonetheless, within moments, I was asleep. There's a place on the edge of sleep where it's hard to tell what's real and what's a dream. In that space, I saw us all as kids again, like it was 1999 all over again. We were in school. It wasn't exactly like any school that we'd ever attended. Dreams are like that. It was a long hallway with lockers that led to some stairs in the distance. And those stairs seemed to go down into a big open room. We were moving in that direction, skipping, talking, and laughing too loud for such a quiet and empty space. But we never seemed to make any progress down the hallway. Those stairs and that room, they stayed in the distance. In the dream, Emma asked me how I was doing, like she was checking in with me. She'd always done that. She seemed to have a remarkable ability to tell when something was wrong. At some of my lowest points, I'd heard from her out of the blue, a private message on some app where we followed each other, just checking in, hoping everything was okay. We'd all thought of Emma as being sweet and caring. She was always concerned about us. But there was something different about it this time. It was kind of frantic and anxious. I was realizing something in the moment. In my dream, her face was doing a subtle kind of pleading with me, as if trying to get me to tell her that she really was one of us, that she belonged. Finally, we got somewhere, but it wasn't those steps down into the big empty room. It was a set of double doors, a big glass entryway. There was sunshine coming in, and I could feel the warmth on my skin. And then I woke up. The sun was coming in my window. It was Wednesday morning. I was still in last night's clothes. I got out from under the covers and started moving around the apartment. I made some breakfast and sat down to eat on the couch. My dream about the five of us, but especially Emma, was still lingering in my mind. It painted my mood, and I found myself in a kind of paralysis. Dreams can sometimes have a way of revealing things. I remembered that night we all got caught playing the mirror game at church. When we told our secrets, Emma's had been that she was worried we were all humoring her, that we were letting her tag along with us, but that none of us really liked her or wanted her around. I really hoped that wasn't true, or that it had been some fleeting bit of teenage insecurity. But as I thought back, I could see other moments suggesting that it might have been there, under the surface, the whole time. Eventually, I got off the couch and I took a shower, trying to reset and shake off the mood I'd woken up in. I started trading messages with Abby, making plans to catch up for dinner that night. Abby asked if it was okay to invite Jess, and I told her of course it was. After all, Jess lived in Cincinnati, and our hometown is almost exactly the halfway point between there and Louisville. It would be about a 45-minute drive for both of us. I hoped that Jess could make it. I was looking forward to seeing them both. I spent a lot of the day on the couch, absently scrolling my phone or watching a show. Losing someone inevitably makes you think about your own life. It creates space for reflection and fresh perspective. It forces thoughts about whether you're really doing what you want to be doing. Are you letting life slip past you? Are you really happy? I was reminded of the messages I'd exchanged with Kaylee the day before. I pulled them up and read them again. Kaylee had asked when Emma died. I told her it had been the day before. And Kaylee said she'd seen her. What was that supposed to mean? She'd said she was planning to come out for the funeral, so I guess we'd find out soon enough. That afternoon, Jess confirmed with Abby, and the three of us ended up in a group chat. We agreed to meet at 7. Abby suggested a new restaurant on the riverfront back home. I'd driven down Water Street, right by the river, the day before. When we were kids, it was pretty much empty. Like a lot of small downtowns in the 80s and 90s. Vacant storefronts, empty apartments overhead. But there was some new life to the place now. And when I arrived that night to meet up with Abby and Jess, I was surprised to see that most of the buildings were full and there were people out and about. Inside, I saw Abby and Jess right away. They were already seated. It's funny. Even though I've seen hundreds of their photos online over the years, I still sort of expected to see them as they were when I last saw them. Abby as the angsty rebel, and Jess like she was already over high school and ready for her new chapter in life. I wondered if they expected me to be the same person I was back then too. As I approached, they spotted me and gave me big dramatic waves as I walked over. Whatever anxiety I might have had about meeting them after all these years, it melted away instantly. Abby stood up and spoke first.
Hey! Oh my God, how are you?
Abby pulled me into a tight hug. And then Jess.
Hey, how are you doing with everything?
I'm okay. As good as can be expected.
We scooted back into the booth, and Jess spoke next.
I can't believe we're all here. What do you all want to drink?
We ordered drinks and food and caught up. We were all at pretty similar points in our lives, even if the details were a little bit different for each of us. We were working, living alone, not particularly interested in dating. Abby told us that she'd bumped into Emma's mom, offering her condolences and asking about the service. She said it was scheduled for Saturday. They'd be making the official announcement tomorrow. There would also be an obituary running in the local paper. Abby offered to pick up a copy for each of us if we wanted. I'd kind of forgotten about newspapers being a thing at all. Inevitably, conversation went back to when we were kids. We talked about all the people we knew in common from high school, what they were doing now, and eventually, we got to Emma. We talked about the last time we'd all heard from her. For Abby, it had been a happy birthday message. And before that, she'd checked in just before Abby had moved back home, when Abby was feeling particularly depressed and alone. For Jess, a comment on an Instagram post and a follow-up DM. Just checking in.
It was kind of nice. I was so frustrated with my last job, and I wanted to just open up my own practice, but I didn't have the money. I remember just being so frustrated in my bathroom when I was getting ready for work.
Hey, but it must have worked out. You have your own practice now. Did Emma, like, talk you into making the leap?
No, I think I would have done it either way. It was just nice to vent, I guess. God, I hate that that's the last time we talked.
She did that a lot, didn't she? Check in on us, I mean.
The others nodded. That's when I remembered the exchange with Kaylee again. How she'd asked if it would be weird if she came to the funeral. I'd been thinking throughout the day about ways to bring it up. Broach the subject with Abby in particular. After all, Kaylee's betrayal had kind of been the final nail in the coffin of our group. And I couldn't help but notice that even though we were reminiscing and trading memories of growing up together, no one had mentioned her yet. There wasn't a good way to do it, so I decided to just rip the Band-Aid off.
So I actually heard from Kaylee yesterday.
I tried to read Abby's expression. Jess looked at me, then over to Abby, before speaking up.
How's she doing?
Well, I think she was trying to get a feel for whether or not she should come back for the funeral, or if that would be weird for everyone.
There was a moment where it felt like the mood changed. I couldn't tell if it was real or just my imagination. And then Abby broke the tension.
Yeah, of course, she should come. It's been a long time, and we were kids. She loved Emma just as much as we did. She should be here.
I could sense Jess relaxing, and I felt better too. We traded a quick glance across the table. We kept drinking and catching up a little longer. I'd miss this. I had friends, but something about Abby and Jess, our history, it was just cozy. Even though we'd all grown up, we were women in our 30s. There were still hints of the girls we'd been. Abby's laugh hadn't changed. Jess's smile was still a little bit crooked, the right side of her mouth arching up higher than her left. At a certain point, I realized that I'd had a little more to drink than I should have, and I probably shouldn't make the drive back to Louisville. Plus, Abby and Jess both had to work in the morning. Luckily, I still had Mom's house here. I'd be able to sleep there for the night and go home in the morning. With a round of hugs in the parking lot, we all went our separate ways.
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, but I'm gonna stay at Mom's house tonight just to be safe.
This was so nice. I'm so glad we got together.
I guess I'll see you all Saturday. Maybe after the funeral, the four of us can all get together before we go our separate ways again.
It was nice to hear Jess include Kaylee in the plans. We both did our best to give Abby a nonchalant look.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
We made our way out of the parking lot. Abby and Jess turned right. I turned left. Toward my mom's house. Toward the edge of town. I pulled into Mom's driveway, and I parked in front of the garage door. I scanned the dark windows. When I decided to have that last drink and stay in town, I hadn't thought about the uneasy feeling I'd had when I was here the night before. I was beginning to regret my decision to stay in town, to stay at Mom's house for the night. But I'm an adult, and I'm not going to let my imagination get away from me. Besides, this is the house I grew up in. If I could stay here by myself when I was a child, I should be able to do it as an adult. I got out of the car and made my way to the front door. I opened it and I turned on the living room lights. I walked through the house and turned on every light and looked in every closet for good measure. Nothing to be afraid of. I looked at the clock on the stove in the kitchen. 10:45. I emailed my boss that I would be out for another day. I had no appetite for getting up early, going back to Louisville, and getting ready for work. I'd packed a bag, including my laptop, and a change of clothes to sleep in. I guess some part of me had anticipated that my night would end here. I got comfortable, laid down on the couch, and watched a couple of episodes of a show I'd been binging. It was just what I needed to get my mind off of the big, empty house. I checked my phone. Kaylee sent me a message saying she'd be flying in tomorrow afternoon. I told her to let me know when she landed. After the second episode, the alcohol was wearing off, and I was having trouble keeping my eyes open. I looked at the clock on the stove again. It was midnight. I closed my laptop and turned off all the lights in the living room and kitchen. I went to the bathroom at the end of the hall. I brushed my teeth and I looked at my reflection the whole time. I stared into the mirror, determined that I wasn't going to let myself get scared tonight. After a few moments, I looked away. What the hell am I doing? I left the light on in the bathroom. Even so, it dimmed and dissipated down the hallway, leaving the living room and kitchen in darkness. I went next door, to my old bedroom, the one where I slept as a child. And just like I remembered, when the bathroom light was on, there was a warm yellow glow under the crack in the door. It had been a long time since I'd slept alone in this house. Not since nights in high school when my mom was out or away for the weekend. But it felt different. Back then, I knew all the neighbors. I knew that mom would be back eventually. I didn't feel like I was truly alone. Maybe it was spending time with Abby and Jess, but I found myself thinking about all those years when this town was my whole world. And that world was small and safe. And it felt like it would go on forever. I looked up at the ceiling and I felt myself fading. I took in the room. There was moonlight from the window. All of my old things were long gone. Anything that didn't come with me to college was packed up and stored away. The closet door was closed. There were storage totes in the corner. But I tried to imagine the room as it was back then, with all of my things. And before I knew it, I was fast asleep. I woke up sometime in the middle of the night. I opened my eyes. The house was silent, and there was no sound from outside either. The yellow glow from the bathroom light was still coming under the door. I had an uneasy feeling, and I glanced around. There was nothing out of place. Well, almost nothing. The closet door. It had been closed when I fell asleep. Now, the folding doors stood open. I stared at them. A primal kind of fear came over me. Remembering when I was a kid and dreamed that my mom would come walking out of those closet doors in the dead of night. I was trying to think of all the reasons they may have come open. Loose hinges. The heat kicking on. There were a dozen reasons that an old, loose door might come open. But I knew that something was wrong. I kept my eyes trained on the closet door until I heard something, until I sensed movement. Over by the bedroom door, I turned to look. And I saw a figure. It wasn't looking at me. It was staring toward the closet door, too. I was frozen, hoping that somehow it hadn't seen me. But then, it turned in my direction. And for a moment, I could make out a face. Eyes a little too big. Mouth a little too wide. It was grinning as it looked at me. I shot up out of bed and scrambled against the wall on the other side of the room. I screamed. It just looked amused. My legs were shaking so hard, I wasn't sure that I'd be able to stay on my feet. It watched me for a moment longer, and then something happened. A sound in the other room. I instinctively knew what it was. The light bulb popping in its socket. I yelped, and the room went black. Panic took over, and I scrambled for my phone, desperate for a source of light. When I got it, I turned on the flashlight and looked around the room. The light was shaky. Whatever, whoever had been there, they were gone. I had a moment where I thought it might be under the bed, about to reach out at me from beneath, so I jumped onto the mattress. A moment later, I jumped off the bed and flipped on the bedroom light. It was blinding after the near total darkness. I took in the room, making sure that no one was there. I looked under the bed. Nothing but storage. I stared at the open closet doors. It was dim, the overhead light not reaching all the way inside. but I could see that it was just storage totes stacked up from the floor to the empty coat hangers. I was still panicking. I looked through my phone and dialed the first number that came up. The last person I'd talked to. Abby. It rang twice, and then I heard her voice through the phone.
Hey, is everything okay? What's wrong?
There's something in the house! There's something happening!
Where are you? Are you at your mom's? I'm on my way.
I hung up, and I kept swiveling my eyes around the room. From one wall to the next. The floor. The ceiling. Everywhere. As the panic began to fade, I was able to sit down on the mattress. I still hadn't gathered the courage to move from it again, to put my feet on the floor. I looked at my phone. It was after 3 in the morning. I was feeling the first pangs of guilt for waking Abby. But she hadn't actually sounded like she'd been sleeping. One thing came to mind as I waited. Even though who or whatever that was seemed to be gone, the bedroom door never opened. There's no way that someone could have left. I saw Abby's headlights pass in front of the windows. She was here. My phone rang, and I picked it up. It was her telling me that she was out front. She stayed on the line with me while I crept off the bed, down the hall, and to the front door. When I opened the door, she was there, looking alarmed. She came inside and threw her coat over the edge of the couch. Then, she turned to face me.
How long has it been going on?
I gave her a confused look, and she spoke again.
It's happening to me, too.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This was The Secret Game, Part 2. Written by Ian Epperson, narrated by Brooke Jeanette. Kaylee is Shelby Novak. Abby is Kayla Temshiv. Miss Lander is Emma Sherjarko. Jess is Carly Coulihan. And Emma is Abigail Blythe. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Music by Kayla Britchie. With all the new patrons coming in, we'll update our producer-level patrons on the November episode. As always, thank you guys so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon, and you can find us on social media. Check us out on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram under Pod13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo, and you'll find links in our show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, you can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com, and you can find that in the show notes, too. Bridget Freeman might be in your closet. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.